Hi, I'm Jason Nias, along with Natalie Wires from Digital River, an e-commerce and payments company dedicated to helping brands go global and grow their revenue. But this isn't about us. This is Commerce Connect, a podcast about people who are creating some of the best e-commerce experiences of our time. Listen on to hear from e-commerce visionaries as they look back on where they started and lessons they've learned that have gotten them where they are today and what they believe is the future of online shopping.
Hi, this is Jason Nias from Digital River. If you look at your financial statements these days, you'll likely see a proliferation of charges that you never could have imagined just a few years ago. I'm talking about subscriptions for everything from streaming services to pet supplies. One of the keys to success for a subscription-based business is getting the billing aspect right. That's where FuseBill comes in. Today, we welcome FuseBill CEO and co-founder, Tyler Amey. Welcome to the podcast, Tyler.
Thanks for having me, Jason. Really excited to be here.
I'm excited to go deep on FuseBill. So while we're at it, let's dig in. You've got a illustrious career of 20 years in the SaaS industry, but we should point out that more than a decade of those years have been at FuseBill, which you co-founded just 10 years out of college. Let's start by having you tell our listeners a little bit about FuseBill and what they do.
Yeah, sure, no problem. So FuseBill is a cloud-based software delivered in a software as a service application. And really what we do is we help our customers manage large amounts of recurring revenue. And really what recurring revenue is it has everything to do with subscriptions or charging your customers on an ongoing basis, whether that's monthly, quarterly, annually. A platform like FuseBill, our whole reason for living is to help our customers automate everything to do with getting invoices out, getting their money back fully in an automated fashion. A lot of other bells and whistles that the FuseBill platform does, but really, Jason, our whole reason for living is to automate billing as much as possible. And again, that has everything to do with dealing with customers that you charge on a recurring basis, which is all about subscriptions.
Right on. Where is some of the complexity that that companies who try to get into the subscription economy, to coin Zuora's term, what complexity do they run into when they recognize that a company like FuseBill would be a great solution to their problem?
Yeah, great question. So generally, we're working with companies that have revenues, they have customers, and they've gotten to a certain point where they're realizing that either A, having humans and a payment gateway and a spreadsheet and then maybe an ERP or maybe a QuickBooks Online on the back end to get their invoices and payments out is just not scalable. So at certain points, it comes to a exec level or you know management level table discussion that to take a business to the next level, having either a humanized process or B, some sort of an internally built process or piece of software, for lack of a better word, is just not scalable. They want to focus on growing their business. They realize that there are experts out there in the market today that can help them automate a lot of these processes. And they want those resources focused on their business, not on getting their invoices out, getting their payments collected, you know, worried about recognizing revenue and all that sort of fun stuff as well. So generally the businesses hit kind of a, we call it bleeding at the head pain, but there's a pain point where they put their hand up and realize, you know, we need the help of an expert. And that's where a company like a FuseBill would come in to help our customers try to automate those processes and really thinking about the next level of scale for those companies. Another one, Jason, that we see a lot too is where, you know, customers are curious or companies are curious about subscriptions as a go-to market model. They're realizing that their internal infrastructure is not built for subscriptions or usage consumption, anything to do with what we call agile billing. And they raise their hand looking for a partner like a FuseBill to help as well.
Well, I love the example. And from where I sit, you know, you see a lot of established brands with established revenue processes and revenue recognition who recognize that there's a consumption behavior expectation from their customers. And they aren't agile enough to effectively take this homegrown service and offer up subscriptions. Do you guys see similar where big companies want to be more agile? So they look at a company like you to help them become that?
Absolutely. That's actually a perfect segue in kind of the founding story of FuseBill. You know, for myself and my co-founding partner here at FuseBill, Greg Burwell, we spent a decade plus with a company who basically used a 1998 founder-built piece of software to, at the end of time, 12 years later, bill 550,000 plus customers. And there was 8 full-time humans managing this, we'll call it a titanic of a system that was just not agile, not quick to move, not quick to adapt to how the company wanted to sell and market, but also how their customers wanted to buy from them. And the whole thesis around FuseBill and why we took a look at this space, thinking we could you know, help a lot of folks, is just to have a agile, lighter weight piece of software that you do not need the expertise of 6 people to spin it up and get it going, to help with that agility that you had just mentioned. And whether it's, again, agility in a company's go-to-market from the way that sales reps want to sell, or the way that marketing wants to price and package, or the way that the customers want to buy, which has also changed to now, you know, wanting either a monthly access to a service for a monthly fee, or at the least an annual. And that changes the dynamic of that kind of company and client relationship as well. You know, if you think about I'll call it the olden days, and I'm from the olden days where, you know, especially in the software space, you would sell a piece of software, never talk to the customer again. Now you're talking to your customers at the minimum, you know, on an annual basis, but now on a monthly basis, consistently asking them for money. And every time that customer pays you, they have a choice in their head to say, yeah, we're going to pay, or no, we're going to dig in here. And the result of that, and it's, you know, one of the things we'll maybe talk about a little bit later, is, you know, companies now have to adapt and change in developing customer success organizations, you know, constantly looking to add value to those clients because there's so many options out there today.
I love that. One of the things I'm also fascinated about is your customer base. You know, if I just go to FuseBill.com, you can see some of the really cool companies that will use your software to help with billing. Companies like Shell or GE maybe fit in some of those earlier examples. Companies who have, you know, 99.999% of their revenue in other places, but they need some agility around the edges. It looks like you guys help them. Or even some kind of more modern, born in the cloud type of companies, like in MarTech stacks, like Uberflip or Rapid Fire Tools, use your service. Are those kind of the two use cases that you predominantly attract, or are there some in the middle as well?
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? So FuseBill has always been a very horizontal play. And by that, I mean, we did not decide to verticalize and go deep in one industry. So we have buckets of customers in, as you'd expect, software as a service or anything as a service type company. You know, the GE and Shell example that you had put together there is a perfect example of not just a subscription, but a physical device that requires some kind of meter or consumption on top of it. And these companies have come to us because they're looking for something that's more lighter weight, quicker to deploy, quicker ROI, but also allows them to tweak those pricing and packaging models so they can adapt to market quicker. The third big one for us is, we'll call it digital content, but really anybody looking to monetize content online. You know, really cool company that utilizes the FuseBill platform from a partnership perspective is Churchill Downs. And you think, what does Churchill Downs do from a billing and subscription perspective? Well, they've got a website, twinspires.com, where they have a large, large amount of clients who log in and look for historical horse lineage information that they monetize as a subscription for access to that data. So think of paywall, that sort of thing. But the other kind of 10%, let's say, Jason, is anything from box of the month to music streaming services to associations to, you know, next gen type companies just looking to take their product to market quicker.
That's great. Yeah, you won the most unique example award of the day with the Churchill Downs monetization approach. I love that. Let's dig deep a little deeper into subscriptions. Obviously, Zuora did the world a favor by kind of creating this concept of the subscription economy. And from where I sit, there's a whole bunch of companies who have really, really strong utility that if they get their fair shake, generally they win more than their fair share. And FuseBill is one of those customer or companies. Can you talk a little bit about how you fit into the subscription landscape of other providers?
Yeah, great question. So for us, we see the market in a few ways. So one, there are a lot of real enterprise-focused companies out there like Azora, Area Systems, GoTransverse, et cetera, that are working with the big businesses out there. In our mind, those are billion-dollar-plus companies, multinational-type organizations. And then there are a whole bunch of folks that are, we'll call them looking a little bit further down market, so call it $0 to $10 million-type businesses. The typical kind of sweet spot customer for FuseBill is, again, as I mentioned earlier, they do have revenues, single digit millions, maybe at the kind of the earliest stage, all the way up to about $100 million. But again, they've all hit that same aha moment where they're realizing their internal infrastructure just is not built to handle the automation and agility that a subscription type of business needs. And these are usually coming down at the exact level where they realize that having, you know, Henry and Joe in accounting doing all this work manually is just not worth it. And it's also impacting the relationship they have with their clients. And that's generally where they would raise their hand, look for a partner like a FuseBill. You know, it seems like almost every day there's a new vendor popping up with a different piece of the landscape. But for us, our bread and butter kind of right down the fairway is that one to kind of $100 million business, but have all hit the exact same, we need some help here. And that's where we kind of come in.
I got it. Do you guys think about the solution? How do you guys think about the solution that you put in the market? Is it going to be one that is effectively product centric? Means you build a set of features and that you roll it out to your entire base. You make monthly updates. Help me think about the product lifecycle management of FuseBill and how you continually innovate on your product.
Yeah, great question. So one of the things that I'm proudest about with respect to our team is that every 2 weeks, our engineering and product team are putting new feature functionality into the market, into production, good to go. So one of our differentiators is the fact that we don't slice our product down for the lower that a customer pays with us. We give our customers access to all the feature functionality, which is very different from a go-to-market perspective than what's out there today. We also do not charge a percentage of the customer's revenue. So if a customer goes from $5 million to $30 million in 1 year on FuseBill, we're not taxing them mid-year with respect to that growth. We're highly invested in their success. We'll talk at renewal time with respect to that. But yeah, for us, it's all about trying to give our customers the best of breed that we can kind of get out to market, as well as our customer success team working with the existing client base to help them find the white spaces in the product that they haven't seen yet to help make them, you know, a stickier client for FuseBill, but also have the product add more value, which helps from that, you know, dreaded subscription churn perspective. So we invest a lot of time and effort into the existing client base as well as not just putting out new shiny feature functionality. So.
There's a lot there to unpack. The first thing I want to talk a little bit about is, you know, you've seen it in a lot of other subscription providers. They have a lot of modules. Do you guys think about it that way? Do you have different things people can buy, or is it really just like, if you're a customer, you get it all?
So it is the latter. If you're a customer, you get access to everything. And again, our goal is to make our customers successful on the platform. We could modularize it by turning feature functionality off, turning integrations off, turning partnership relationships on or off. But for us, we think the best bang for our customers' buck is to give them access to the entire platform, see what they truly need. We onboard every customer with FuseBill employees and help them get the most out of the actual platform. Could be different phases, but really giving people access to everything. You know, I think we're the only ones in the market, I could be wrong, that offer the product that way. I know everybody's trying to get more and more and more out of their clients, which I totally get being the CEO of a business. But for us, again, if our customers are successful on the platform, their businesses will grow. And we see that come renewal time with FuseBill.
That's excellent. So I talked to... Well, it's no surprise that Digital River and FuseBill are partners. We're very excited about the potential of the relationship. In deciding kind of you vetting us and us vetting you, one of the things that we dug into was, what is FuseBill like to work with? What do their customers say about them? And I'm sure you know this, but they come back and they say, first of all, you guys are a Canadian company in Ottawa, Canada. down the road from Shopify, but they say that you guys are Canadian nice. They say that you guys are customer centric. They say that you guys give them white glove service, whether they deserve it or not, based on their volume. Is that a cultural thing? How do you, Tyler, how did you create a company that has a reputation like that?
Yeah, it's, I actually got goosebumps when you said that. So thanks for bringing that up. But
the Canadian part or?
the whole thing, right? I mean, it's humbling to think that we have employees who are driven by the success of our customers. Definitely there's a Canadian piece in there of being nice and being humble and ensuring that, you know, there's no bleep holes around in the business, but it's all part of our core values of, as a business. One of our core values is family first, and it's not just our families at home, our Fuse Bill family, but it's our customer and partner family. And it's something that we've talked about since day one with our employees. And we do weed folks out pretty quickly who aren't laser focused on the customer. And it all ties back to that subscription type relationship, right? There are so many options out there for customers to potentially go to that if we're not consistently adding that type of value to our accounts, you know, they're going to go elsewhere. And we take that very seriously.
Fantastic. Shifting gears a bit, if you want to know what markets are hot, follow the money. Big money usually finds the spaces that are poised for disruption, for big growth, et cetera. And the subscription or billing economy has taken on some money recently, including you guys. You want to speak a little bit about that and what that means for your business?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's been an interesting kind of last 12 to 15 months in our space where we're seeing, you know, a lot of our competitors pairing up with larger financial type partners or either merging together, right? So for us, we brought in a round of investment from Greater Sum Ventures and their main portfolio company, Stax, who's a payments vendor, to really help take this company to the next level. And for us, that means continuing to improve in our product, because the product at the end of the day is what the company is all about, you know, continuing to improve in our team. But I think what this gives our customers, especially after 10 years of faith and trust with FuseBill, is we have a multi-billion dollar partner now at the table who is solely focused on the next 10 years of the business, which for us, it was either, you know, Series B, which was the next letter of the alphabet for us, or, you know, finding a good, strong partner who really complements the business. And we're already starting to see some of their influence in the maturation of FuseBill from a processes perspective. And the capital obviously helps as well. But we're putting it all into the business and the client base, which is really exciting.
Fantastic. Congratulations. Huge, huge milestone for you guys.
Thank you.
Well, speak a little bit about, you know, one of the things we talked about at the time of the transaction was how the Digital River FuseBill partnership, this could be fuel for that fire. Can you speak a little bit about the future, the vision of the value between our two companies and the offering it, it provides?
Yeah, I think we're very complementary to each other, Jason. I know the teams have worked together immensely with respect to the partnership and working out how we mutually speak to the existing customer base and your customer base and our customer base and how we kind of pair up together. You know, I think from a pure agile billing, and I'll use that buzzword perspective, the integration that we're working on together will really empower the Digital River customers with access to everything that we spoke about earlier in the podcast, the agility, the go-to-market flexibility, just that, you know, I heard the term before, speed is the new black. And I think the partnership is really going to help, you know, both customer bases with respect to just being quicker. And a lot of times being quicker in markets is the reason why people win markets. And yeah, we're very bullish on the partnership, if you can't tell for sure.
Excellent, especially as it relates to international, going global.
Yes, yes, sir.
So, you know, I keep hearing people talk about, it's almost a little bit of a shift in language, but people are talking less about subscriptions and more about agile billing. Is that intentional by you and others, or is that just another description of the industry?
It's a great point, right? So we actually borrowed the term from mutual consultants or it's called, the MGI folks, I think, coined the term. But it really is important for us, right? Because, you know, a platform like FuseBill, yes, we do handle subscriptions and we do work with our customers on that recurring revenue. but it is a full service billing system. So the concept of billing one time, billing for physical goods, billing for consumption or usage, metering, seat licenses, all come under the umbrella of a fuse bill platform. So that, with the ability to be quick, kind of like our theme for today, that whole agile billing aspect, I love it. You know, I can see, might talk a little bit about where I think the market's going here in a sec, but, you know, I can see just based on some of the conversations that we're having with our prospects and existing customers, they're looking for new ways that might be a little bit above and beyond the subscription, where maybe there's a even lower subscription, but access to a service only for what you use. And, you know, I came into today with a perfect example of a sales pursuit that we're working on in the insurance space, where the insurance vendor is actually exploring a new go-to market from an insurance perspective, where you only pay for car insurance while you're using the car or certain hours of the day. So you'd still have your monthly insurance fee, which would be lower, but from 2 a.m. to 6 p.m., or sorry, 2 a.m. to 6 a.m., it's 20% of the normal rate, right? So folks are looking to get a little bit more creative to see, you know, they can differentiate themselves than what's in the market there today. And, you know, luckily for a platform like ours, and I'll say ours together, we do have the ability to meet use cases like that. So I can see, I don't see subscriptions going anywhere for quite some time, and I'm thankful for that. But I can also see consumers continuing to drive the behavior for all companies from a go-to-market perspective.
Yep, that's such a great point. Brands have to differentiate, and one of the ways they do so is in the way that you pay or consume their services, and therefore you need billing to be able to keep up with that. I love the example. I've never heard one like that. That's a really good one. Can you share some more examples of, you know, where you think the market is going? Is it more of the same?
Yeah, I think it is, right? I mean, I think one of the things that's been really interesting during the pandemic is a lot of the control now, or most of the control, even more than before, has gone into the consumer, right? So consumers are looking for, you know, not the $100 a month streaming service, the $4 a month streaming service, or, you know, they're looking for better, cheaper, more valuable options, and it's forcing companies to be more creative with respect to their go-to market. So I can see that, you know, kind of gig economy type model where it's just pay for what you use, you know, potentially coming, and we're getting a lot of, you know, inquiries about that on the sales floor, let's call it. But I, again, Jay, I don't think subscriptions are going anywhere, you know, not just from the way that what consumers want, but for companies like ours, companies that go to market with a subscription type model, A, are more valuable. You know, there's a lot of data out there that proves companies with kind of that recurring revenue model just are, you know, trade at higher multiples on public markets. I can't remember the last time I heard, especially in the tech enabled world, the market leader was not some kind of a subscription company. Like, even Amazon is a subscription company if you look at what they do, right?
Absolutely.
So I can't see it going anywhere. I can just see permutations of it where folks are trying to, you know, maybe disrupt the market or differentiate themselves in a market by offering a little bit of a different twist on a subscription.
Yeah, you got my head spinning. If you just look at the companies who are going public now in the SaaS space, all of them have a component of a unique billing model or a recurring revenue stream that they can count, and that's creating unbelievable valuations. So you're exactly right. Brands are seeking this as a way to create shareholder equity, as well as the customer demand. So it's kind of a multi-force.
Yep. No. Absolutely. Yep. The other point I think there too, for those that are running businesses or are thinking about subscriptions, is the cash flow that subscriptions create, right? You can always count, assuming you're doing your job, on that cash flow coming in every month. And yeah, it's not the, you know, the big game hunting that used to happen, but as you start to build up that snowball of recurring revenue, not only do you get the higher multiple, but you're also getting that cash flow, which for many early stage businesses or smaller businesses is the lifeblood of anything. So,
yeah, that's gets my head spinning. The other example that you gave earlier which the insurance company, I thought was a really good one. What I hear when you say words like that is brands looking to disrupt themselves on the basis of trying to open up new markets and be more competitive. You see that? Is that some of what you saw maybe at a GE or a Shell of them trying to reinvent new ways to monetize?
Yeah, I think in the latter two examples, it's more just very large organizations recognizing that they need something that's more nimble, right? They need to be able to adapt a lot quicker. And our whole Protus history at the previous company, it still took months for us to change anything in that old billing system. So now you have a platform like a FuseBill or a FuseBill combined with a Digital River. You can make go-to-market pricing package changes within minutes or seconds now, as opposed to having to get six resources in place to do any tweaks or changes. So I think those ones are really all about that agility buzzword that we've been using a little bit here today. But, I think that we're, you know, kind of when we started the business here, we were still in the very early adopter stage from a kind of subscriptions perspective. This was, you know, let's call it 2010 when we started FuseBill, but really 2001 when I personally started my tech career. We're now in that kind of late majority, right? So for businesses that are not adopting a subscription type model, I personally feel like they're getting left in the dust a little bit from a market competitiveness perspective. And the pure focus that those subscription type companies now have to have on their customers, not just the next sales pursuit and the next sales pursuit, but they have this massive existing base. And I mean, I can't remember, I'm going to butcher the data here a little bit, but I saw something, it was Salesforce.com, like 70 to 80% of their revenue is from the upsells and renewals of their existing customer base, right? Obviously, that's at a mega scale. But for smaller businesses, again, I can't stress enough just to be hyper-focused on your customers, continually to add value to your product and your offering, and also working with them to ensure they find those white spaces in your product that they may not be using today, that again, gives them more value, creates a stickier customer for yourself as well.
You know, I had a former podcast guest, Nick Mehta, talked about, he literally wrote the book about customer success. My question for you is, how does customer success infiltrate the way you run FuseBill and the way that you kind of educate these new people to billing and subscriptions on how they have to think about customer success? Because it's a bit of a paradigm shift from the old way of doing it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So for us, we have a few things. One, for us, our customer success people do not carry a quota. So they're not incentivized by anything but, you know, kind of that net retention client number to ensure that that net retention of our client base, works out well for them. So they spend a lot of time, in quarterly business reviews, checking to see what feature functionality customers are using of the platform in individual accounts. And, you know, hey, did you know, we have a newsletter, webinars, that sort of thing as well on that side of things, Jason. And then, you know, I think the other thing obviously to consider, and I've said this earlier again, is just you've got to be consistently sharpening the saw with respect to your product offering, right? Because there are a ton of competitors out there, cheaper competitors, potentially more feature functionality than you have. So building that human relationship, and I think you said it perfectly with the, the FuseBill values and our core values of family first and that sort of thing, those things matter. At the end of the day, you're selling to a human, right? I can get into a whole tangent on ease of use and ease to do business with in terms of things like just, I want to change my payment information, or I'd like to update my my subscription, or buy more or buy less, and having an automated partner like a FuseBill and or a Digital River to help enable that. But that's for a podcast on its own.
Right on. Okay, well, we're getting close to the end of our allotted time, and there's a few questions I like to ask everybody. The first is, Tyler, being the CEO of a hot, fast-growing billing, agile billing company, where do you get your influence? Who do you look to read and consume their information to make you a better CEO?
So it's interesting. I have a few. I knew this question was coming too. So, for me, there's a few folks. So one, the former CEO of Protus IP Solutions, Joseph Noor. Most people listening to this today won't know who he is, but he's a founder that built a $80 plus million business, exited for a really nice amount and have seen all the stages of taking a company from really napkin idea to success. So Joseph is one. Damian Steele was the head of Omer's Ventures. He's also a former Fuseville board member, was on our board for 8.5 years, is another one. But again, nobody would know them. So I came with a few that folks would know. Obviously Jason Lemkin and the Saster crew, the content that those folks put out, I think is spot on for any founder or CEO at any stage of the journey. I was so happy when I found them because I realized that I was not alone. So, when you want to talk about an influencer, that community and heading to those shows and hanging out with like-minded people like that, I think is huge. And then, Mark Benioff, obviously on the Salesforce side of things, if anybody hasn't read that book Behind the Cloud, that's a really interesting one to see. People gave them the thumbs down so many times in the early days, right? And it was this whole idea of subscriptions and the subscription model. So crazy, crazy to look forward and see where they are. And then the other two guys, I think you mentioned the company earlier, but Toby and Harley over at Shopify are pretty cool as well. Local company, really amazing to see what they've done with their business. So those would be a few. Some are known, some are lesser known, but yeah.
Right on. Keeping Ottawa represented there with your answer. I like it. You bump into those guys at the coffee shop very often?
Not in the last year and a half, but.
Right. Fair enough. Let's shift gears to, you're obviously an e-commerce billing company. Who does billing right based on your experience that you'd want to share with us?
Who does billing right? That's
give me an example of an e-commerce experience where the billing was just simply done right.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's funny. I came in prepared today to tell you one that wasn't right.
So go ahead. Let's do that. Tell me one that's bad.
All right. Awesome. Well, I'm going to geek out a little bit for you here. So, the pandemic actually dusted off my love for sports card collecting. So a couple months into the pandemic, had a big box in my basement. Opened it up. It was, my hockey cards and football, baseball cards from 1980s and 90s, that sort of thing. So, after playing around with them a little bit, I realized, hey, some of these must be worth something. So I went online to find a software to actually track my card collection, let me know what the values are, what I have, et cetera. And before I found the one of my choice, I actually had a terrible experience with one. So, the first one that I found on Google, they offered a free trial online, touted all the bells and whistles of what I thought I needed. And I was like, cool, okay, let's go. The problem is I went through their online signup page and they didn't have a free trial. They didn't have free trial as an option at checkout. So I had to put in, put in your credit card, $9.99 a month, not even first 7 days free or anything like that. So being a e-commerce guy, and I'll put that in big air quotes, I went elsewhere, Googled the next one, found the next one, 7 day free trial. And now I'm paying $50 a month. Right. So that the example there is that horrible checkout process made me as a consumer pay five times more. I don't think I'll ever know if that $9 a month software is better or worse than the $50 one, but I found my home. I'm not moving. Right. I've loaded my cards in there. I know what they're worth, but they lost a customer because of that kind of checkout experience.
Fantastic. Well, I don't think anyone's ever given me a poor experience. I like that. Have you ever heard of a company that kind of came to prominence during the pandemic? It's called Rally Road. You heard of this?
No.
It's e-commerce a little bit, but it's effectively taking a memorabilia or a baseball card or a hockey card and allowing it to be sold as fractional shares. So I own like 10 shares of a Babe Ruth card, as an example, and you pay whatever that percentage is. So it's almost like making it a stock market out of memorabilia. So it's e-commerce. So we can talk about that here.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Well, I think that would give access to, guys like me, access to a Babe Ruth card, because I'm not paying $2 million for one of these crazy cards, right? But that's neat. That's
exactly
really
no. So I thought that was pretty interesting innovation around. In fact, it's really just a modification of billing. Yep. Taking some asset and breaking it into micro shares.
Absolutely.
Okay. The last thing, I have two other things. One is, are you, podcasts have exploded during the pandemic. Are you an avid podcast listener? And if so, which ones would you recommend?
Yeah, it's funny that you actually say that. So for me, losing my commute to and from work during the pandemic actually turned my podcast listening pretty much off. Before that, AMs, drives into work, definitely Harry Stebbings and the Saster podcast, as I mentioned earlier, go-to content for me. Another gent by the name of Nathan Latka does SaaS podcasts, and he analyzes SaaS companies. And I like that fact that he grills the founders a little bit. So those would have been my go-tos in the morning. And then on my way home, and I think, Jason, you and I might have spoken about this before, but I have a love for NFL and anything NFL, fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, that sort of thing. So way home from work was always unwind time, 35 to 45 minutes, an hour, depending on the Canadian winter, where I can just listen to guys and gals talk about fantasy sports and fantasy football and just geek out a little bit more on that side of things. And that for me was an unwind before, you know, getting home to the young family. So.
Right on. Steelers fan, right? Or is that?
No, that's me. Yeah. Yep. Steelers fan.
I thought so. I was pretty sure. Right on. Well, Tyler, this has been fantastic. I'm not grilling you like that podcast that you like. That's just kind of an easier meeting. But the question I'd have is, if viewers are interested in learning more about you, your career path, or FuseBill, how should they get in touch with you?
Yeah, I think the best way to find me personally is at Tyler Amie on Twitter. It's EYAMIE. Or on LinkedIn. Twitter, I'm usually pretty quick on. Anything about FuseBill, the company, FuseBill.com. And, you know, had a great time chatting with you here, Jason. Really appreciate you and the team inviting me on. Great to be here.
Fantastic. Tyler, you're a superstar. Thanks for your partnership and for your time today.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Commerce Connect podcast, brought to you by Digital River and edited at Matriarch Digital Media in Minneapolis, Minnesota. To learn more, head to digitalriver.com.